Welcome, everybody, to Keeping It Real with Casey Armstrong, right here on the Women's Radio Network. This is the new home for outstanding, empowered women everywhere, and I'm your host, Casey Armstrong. Today, I am joined by someone very, very special. This is something that is very hard to understand for me because I am not the brightest, but I've done enough research and I've read so much about Dr. Rodney Smith, who is a genius, by the way. This guy has done so much in the field of economics, consulting, finance, in the policy of water resources. So we're going to talk to him, and it's my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Rodney Smith. Hey, Dr. Rodney, welcome back to the program. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, Casey.
Hey, I hope in the intro you didn't think that it was too hard to understand. I'm trying to make it so the listeners understand what you do, because you are a very, very smart man. I am not. My listeners are a lot smarter than I am. So, let's talk about Stratacon. Tell me what Stratacon does.
Sure. We were founded in the early 80s, and we're involved in, as you said in the introduction, the economics and policy and finance of water resources throughout the Western United States and Mexico. That means we look at investments into the development of water resources. We help cities or businesses acquire water for their needs, and we also assist investors in the decisions about whether and how to invest in the water industry.
Gotcha. Now, I know that you are pretty much like a genius in this area of, you know, water policy issues. And you have this thing called HydroWonk. What's HydroWonk? I know you do a blog. Can you tell listeners what HydroWonk is? Because I know you're looking.
Sure. Yeah, HydroWonk was a blog that that we started about a year and a half ago. And I and other people who have ideas are welcome to post their thoughts on the blog. And we're trying to create an open intellectual marketplace so people can exchange different viewpoints on what are the trends in the industry and to give their insight on individual events. So, for example, out here in California, there's about a $25 billion proposed water project to solve the water problems in California. And I did an eight-part series just sort of taking apart each of the basic issues and giving my perspective on that. And it's a way of just, as blogs are increasingly important in the public policy arena, it's a way to just get out information and viewpoint.
Hmm. Well, Stratacon has been in business for over 23 years, and you're published, and basically people look to you to find out information about water policy, marketplace, water policy issues. It's you are like a you are a trusted like a trusted staple in this area. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true. How I got started is I was on the faculty of the Graduate School of Business, University of Chicago.
Yeah, you were academics. Academics, yes, to business.
Yes, I went from academics to business. But at the time I was in academics, the Ford Foundation gave a grant to the National Governors Association for someone to do studies on what is the future of finance and later markets in Western water. And the National Governors Association reached out to me to do those studies that resulted in two books. The first one was called Troubled Waters, and then the second one was called Trading Waters. And what that involved was really going out in the field, talking to governors and directors of water resource departments and large water users, farmers, to try to get a view about what the future issues would be and trends. After the first book, I said this work would be much easier if there was a specialized journal. or something mm-hmm. where one could track things. And so we created a water strategist in the 80s, which later became a monthly, where we track developments that would be useful for anyone in this industry to get better information. And I think through our ability to be very factually correct and try to separate fact from opinion, I think mm-hmm. that was the source of our creation of our reputation.
Nice.
I guess it's the old-fashioned way. We sort of started it, and we earned our reputation.
Yeah. Was that just through hard work, diligence, and intelligence, and your determination for your craft? Is that
yes.
accurate?
Yes, and I think also my academic background helped, because we come from this as researchers. We bring the research ethic in, in terms of facts and analysis. In fact, I have a position that's held by Marta Weissman for the last 14 years, a director of research in my firm.
Hmm. Wow.
And so that is very important part of the ethos of everything we do.
Gotcha. Now, here's a couple of questions that I just had, and I'm sure you get them all the time, and I hope they're not too simple, but I think the listeners need to know this stuff. Now, what can happen if water isn't clean?
Well, if water is not clean, we have health risks from
what
the
type?
And the best way of looking at that is to go from the United States, where we've invested a lot in the cleanness of our water, and think of Africa, where there's been, because of the poverty there, they have not made the investments in water quality. I mean, infant mortality rates that are very high.
And that's all because of water, you're saying, Doc?
Yeah, from the lack of clean water, absolutely.
Wow.
And also, life expectancies are lower. From an industrial point of view, certain businesses, I mean, all businesses need clean water. So
mm-hmm.
so it's both a public health problem as well as an economic base issue if you don't have suitably clean water.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the United States, where is, in your opinion, the cleanest water?
Wow. I guess I would have to sound like I'm promoting Coors Beer here. It'd be up
in Colorado, right?
Colorado.
Well, I guess
I have no relationships to Coors.
I know you don't, but I'm just asking your opinion.
Yeah.
And is that because of the atmosphere? Because it's out there. It's not a huge. Well, there are big cities, but it's not like L.A. It's not like New York or Chicago
with
all this pollution.
It starts way up in those mountains. Now I'm then sounding like a Coors spokesperson here, but it's way up in those mountains.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is my interview with Tom Coors.
And when the runoff comes down those mountains, it's just absolutely beautiful and clear. Clear and clean water. Probably amongst the cleanest you could ever find, at least in
So it's in Colorado, in your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it goes to the heights of the Rockies.
Gotcha. Now, why is that? Because of how, maybe you can explain this to the listeners. How does water become clean? I know it goes through the ground and it's filtrated through the ground and eventually it does get clean, right?
Yes, there's certainly some natural processes at work, but certainly for municipalities, most of the water will go through some form of treatment. Surface water will go through surface water treatment plants. If you're pumping water from under the ground, if it doesn't meet water quality standards, it will probably be some form of wellhead treatment.
Mm-hmm. Should I have any problem drinking water from the tap?
No, I don't think you should, because, again, let me qualify that. In the United States, there's a lot of very small, remote, rural systems that are facing water quality problems. So if you're in a small, rural community, I would say, check into that. But for the people who live in the cities and everything, there's been an investment in the necessary treatment to meet drinking, standards.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there's a lot of different water qualities that meet those standards, and some people may not like the taste of it. There's some areas where the total dissolved solids is below, the maximum levels allowed, but still pretty high, and they may not like the taste of the salty water. So you may want to put in a purifier on your kitchen sink.
Do those help?
Check that out. Yeah.
They do. They do their job?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really? Now, I've noticed, I live in Long Island and New York City, and from what I hear, this is just, I don't know if it's urban legend, and you're the person to answer the question, but they say New York City drinking water from the tap is one of the cleanest. It's not Colorado, but it's one of the cleanest. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, that's also true, because you import water from upstate New York, and you're coming from another large watershed. And so you're, hundreds of miles away. So you don't have the density around your water source. It's all about whether or not it's coming from a remote area or not.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Because if you have a lot of farming in your area, there's runoffs from fields or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It could be fertilizers or whatever. So, yeah, that's right. I mean, there was great planning that was done by the city of New York, a century or so ago.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you, I spent time up in Saratoga, which is upstate New York. And when you take a shower, it is a different smelling. It's a different feel of the water. It's almost like slick on your skin.
Right.
Does that sound strange, or
no,
have you heard that?
Not at all. I mean, I have not personally been to Saratoga, but I know there's Saratoga spring water.
Mm-hmm.
So there's spring water up there, which, when you get into spring water, that's unusually, very high quality.
Okay.
Almost pristine.
Really? But it doesn't smell like regular water that we have downstate.
Right.
Is that the mineral content? What is that, Doc?
Yes. It's all going to be related to your mineral content.
Mm-hmm. And that's all safe?
Pardon me?
It's all safe? I mean,
Sure.
Yeah. So that's good stuff. So, all right, enough about water. How did you get into this? I mean, how did you get into what you're doing now? You've been there for 20-something years.
Sure.
How did you get interested in this line of work?
Well, when I left the University of Chicago with my Ph.D. in economics, my first job was at the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, which is a research think tank. And the California legislature came to RAND in the mid-70s and wanted them to have a study done just thinking about the future of California water problems and the role of economics and markets. So I got involved in that study. It was a two-year study, but 6 months into it, I got an offer I couldn't refuse to go back to the University of Chicago in a position.
Mm-hmm.
But the water bug had infected me, so I was riding. As a professor, and I was one of the few people at that time writing on the economics of water. So people started coming to me for advice because, Professor Smith, I have this issue, I have that issue. And that generated the Stratacon, because I had consulting where people were coming to me with interesting problems. Then I got into the book writing business through the National Governors Association. Then we started the research publication because we wanted information sources out there. And then that fed into more and more people coming to advice. So by the early 90s, I was overworked. So I decided, I just think I'm going to take a two-year leave of absence and see how it would be to be full-time doing this.
Mm-hmm.
The 2 years flew by, and I resigned a full professorship with all that economic security.
Mm-hmm.
At a time when my kids were in elementary school.
Oh, wow.
I haven't looked back. I'm still involved on boards of schools and stuff, but And I don't regret that decision in the least, because it gave me an opportunity to be in on the ground on things and test, you know, and see how my knowledge works in reality, as opposed if I was just a professor, you know, writing.
Right, right.
So I do now. Mm-hmm. Although I still write. That's why we have a blog. We've just created a new information service, Journal of Water, journalofwater.com. So we are very committed to having a continuing research part of our firm. And I think that's the core foundation from which our reputation has emerged.
Nice. Now, can we access that through stratwater.com, which is your website? Is there a link or something?
Yeah. There'll be a button there, or you can go directly to journalofwater.com.
Okay. Way. Cool. Now, I'm sure a lot of, you know, the listeners and I want to know what a typical day for Dr. Rodney Smith is. Can you take me through when you wake up and until you come home? What do you do? The whole thing, please.
Well, I mean, just like everyone else in the 21st century, you check your emails first in the morning. You know?
Okay.
Either because someone promised you something, to be there in the morning, or things come out of the blue. I probably spend 2 hours a day on conference calls mm-hmm. on various matters. We're also involved, as I said earlier, on helping investors assess opportunities. So I may have a call on a potential project that's looking for funding. I will also spend time every day. I sit down with both my director of research and my project coordinator, who's sitting outside in her office next to mine. And we're a very flat organization. Totally flat organization. Mm-hmm. In fact, we call ourselves a tribe. I mean, yes, I'm the president, and yes, they're my employees, but very flat. Want people to speak up. I want people to give their own views. I want people to challenge each other, and we do so in a very collegial way. So there's that part of the day. I'm mm-hmm. probably writing 2 to 3 hours a day.
Wow, that probably much.
It could be the blog, it could be the Journal of Water, it could be a memo on investment ID. Sometimes we get retained as experts in civil lawsuits over water, so I may be drafting an expert report.
Mm-hmm.
And probably spend a day analyzing, probably an hour analyzing data for some reason or another.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And then before I know it, it's the end of the day.
There you go. There you go. All right, so home for dinner and just do it all over again.
Yeah.
All right, no problem with that. Now, let me ask you, I know we're running out of time here, but what I would like to know for the listeners, because I'm sure they're wanting to know, what can they do to make sure that they are doing everything right to have the cleanest, most nutritional, well, it's not really nutritional, but it's... let's just say the cleanest water. What can they do? Should they drink out of the tap? Should they buy bottled water? Should they get one of those big, jugs and drink from there? Cook all their stuff and that stuff. Maybe you can talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, sure. I think one thing, and I know not everyone will want to do this, but the water agencies that serve the customer are usually pretty anonymous to their customers. In part because they've been so successful that the tap's always been running. Depending where you are in the United States, there's going to have huge problems about water quality, challenges to water quality, or even drought and water shortages. And they need to be part of a community that puts a little more light on your water provider. So keep attuned to, the mailers you get. Show up to a couple meetings to express your viewpoints, because the biggest problem water providers have is they're so used to, not being raising their rates much, and they don't want to raise the rates much, that they get afraid about making the necessary investments to maintain water's reliability and clean up and good high-quality water. So start holding your water provider accountable. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is these agencies are required to post water quality reports by federal law. Take a look.
Are you talking about pH balance? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh,
like
alkaline? All that stuff. So you go to the website of your water provider, they'll have a, you know, click here for our water quality reports.
Mm-hmm.
And see where they are vis-a-vis the federal standards. If their contaminant levels are well below those standards, that should give them confidence that they can, you know, turn on that tap and not worry.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, though, as we said earlier, is there's just a taste issue. If you don't like the taste of the water, maybe consider putting on a filtration.
Get one of those filtration things.
In your sink. And just run everything. I know that I have a filtration system in my kitchen, and you know, we use it to fill the coffee or anything we drink goes through that filtration mm-hmm. system because it improves the taste of the water. Those are things you can do, and the cost of that is just really a one-time expense, and it's much cheaper than buying, you know, designer bottled water.
It's so true.
People are using that too because of the portability. You know, you can take two bottles of water with you as you're driving for an hour or whatnot.
Right.
And so I'm not anti-bottled water, but I'm just saying, you know, one thing you got to do in bottled water is read the label and see where it's coming from.
If it comes from Colorado, it's good.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, and are some of the bottled water is from springs.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the bottled water is just from, you know, a groundwater well in the middle of the desert of California. You know.
Wow.
You may just want to look into that.
Check into that. Hey, Dr. Rodney T. Smith, he is the president at Stratacon Incorporated. The website, stratwater.com. What a great guest and what a person who knows so much about water. And I enjoyed talking to you, and I really hope to speak with you again. So, Dr. Rodney, thank you for coming on the program.
My pleasure, and good day to you all.
You too. Have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Same to you.
Okay, guys, I'm Casey Armstrong. You've been listening to the Women's Radio Network. This is the home for empowered women everywhere. You keep it locked at WRNW1.com. Stay tuned.